It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, May the 24th, 2026. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsOG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, and come join me at TheTalkingMetsPodcast.com. Chat for free, premium content, updates on the show, all at TheTalkingMetsPodcast.com. And while you're at it, leave me a 5-star review at your favorite podcasting service. Can't hurt, especially since this is probably your favorite show. And I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. Happy Memorial Day weekend here in this rainy, what I would say, horrible start to the summer fun in the sun. Rainy weekend feels dreary and probably much better to stay inside. And let's be honest here as Mets fans, if it weren't for the New York Knicks and the sunshine they're bringing to the sports landscape, it'd be a completely lost sports weekend on top of the bad weather. But we're here to talk Mets baseball, and we're at that ceremonial first third of what we how we evaluate this team. It's the end of the getting to know you phase, and it's the start of what does this team need phase. And you hope that it's the second leg of a situation that leads to them going for it and competing for a division or a playoff spot. And let's be quite honest, none of that is really, and I had notes earlier in the week and I put together notes for the show, even before the Mets scored a couple of runs this weekend, literally a couple of runs in three games, and guys got swept by the Marlins. This is a ballpark that's not at the Turner Field House of Horrors level, but it's a dreary ballpark, even though Mets fans travel. They certainly don't travel like Knicks fans, but and they didn't really travel to the extent that they normally do, I think, in other series that the Mets have had in Miami. But despite that, just nothing seems to go well in Miami for the Mets. They always seem to play down to the Marlins in seasons that the Marlins are clearly inferior. Now, I mean, let's face it, these teams are at best even. And, you know, the Marlins have plucky pitching, some plucky hitters, and always seem to find a way to get the job done. But even before that, I think we're at a point that, and let's be clear, the Mets are a team right now, even as they've played better this month. And when I say play better, I think they're going to be, after today's game, what, they're 12-10 here in the month of May. They've righted the ship from an awful, awful April. And despite that, despite, you know, that not really being a great record when you consider some of the competition that they've played throughout the month, even if they had won a couple of games this weekend and you would be feeling better going to the Memorial Day holiday, the facts are this. When you look at the league in general, you have four teams right now playing 600 baseball in the National League. You have the Braves, you have the Brewers, you have the Dodgers, and you have the Padres playing 600 baseball. In a league that has a ton of in-the-muck parity, those teams are in excellent, excellent shape on this Memorial Day. You've got two teams, the Cubs and the Cardinals. Now, let's put this in perspective. 540 baseball is 88 wins. And historically, 88 wins put you in a playoff spot. Even before the three wild card era, it put you in a good spot to possibly be in a conversation for a wild card. So you have two teams, the Cubs and the Cardinals, that are playing at that level. Cubs have been struggling the last couple of weeks. The Cardinals, I'm not so sure. They're serious. I have a feeling they'll have some regression there and fall back to the pack. And, you know, that right now puts you at the four teams that are 600, very serious playoff teams, and then the two additional teams. That puts you at six teams in the playoffs and really no room for the rest of the 500 or hang around 500 muck league that includes the Phillies and the Nationals and the Reds and the Pirates and the Diamondbacks. The Mets aren't even in that muck yet. So the Mets are next tier down, which is one of the worst records in the league, and have a lot of work to do to get to even 500 before you could consider them serious contenders. But, you know, as they played better this month, you had to start to think and dream. And a week ago, after they had taken two out of three from the Yankees in the Subway Series, he was starting to think, well, look, they've had this kind of run a couple of years ago in a 3-wild-card league. They're not buried. Maybe they could get something going. They had the exciting extra innings win in D.C. that made you think that things were starting to turn. The corner was being turned. And then they go out and they lose a couple of games in D.C. And then obviously three here, and they're on a 5-game losing streak. They lost a couple of games. I don't know, 5 here. They're on a 3-game losing streak. They won the last one there in D.C. And away you go. But even with the Mets' current pace, let's say they stay at a 5-4, which they have a 5.45 win percentage this month, which this current Mets team, this current iteration, is on pace for about 88 wins. They've gotten onto that pace since the beginning of May. Even with that pace, that puts them at about 80, 81, 82 wins if they play the rest of the way at this current pace, which quite simply is not enough. Now, at the end of the day, it'll be April and the 12-game losing streak and how poorly they played in April that'll do them in. But the league is not going to fall back. I can't see a scenario unless the Cubs and the Cardinals completely collapse and everybody else stays around that 500 to 5 games over for the rest of the summer where the league falls to where you saw last year where you had the Mets and the Reds and the Giants snuck in there late and what have you. So I just don't see that. So even before this horrible weekend, it was pretty clear to me that this was a team that had long odds to make the postseason. Forget about 2024. That was an anomaly, what happened there. And what they really are now, and we've gotten to know this team, and what's interesting is that we're actually kind of going through another phase of the getting to know you phase because so many changes have happened in the last couple of weeks with Stearns in the front office incorporating Maura Beto and A.J. Ewing and Zach Thornton. And Christian Scott has finally kind of got back into the mix here. And now Jonathan Pintaro is going to get some time here in the bullpen. You may see some more bullpen arms be brought up. Jonah Tong had an impressive outing out of the bullpen the other night. So you're starting to see some of the youth. The Mets have had this farm system that was beginning to percolate since Cohen took over. Since Stearns took over, it was ranked very highly by ESPN. Nobody seems to want to talk about that anymore because things have been so bad for about a calendar year now, from last June to now. Mets over the last 162 games, I think are 72 and 89, a very mediocre record. What's a kick in the you-know-what is that the way the pitching has been this year, much better, both the starters and the bullpen, despite the injuries to Clay Holmes and Senga and the underperformance by Manaea. If they had gotten the kind of pitching you've seen since the beginning of the year, at the end of last year, I think the Mets make the playoffs pretty easily, but it doesn't matter. Knowing that this is the situation you're in, that you're starting to have to reacquaint yourself with some of these young players, with maybe more to come, the Mets truly are what I would say here at the Memorial Day end of the getting to know you phase, Mark, and in the middle team. So you went into this season, I think Stearns had to make a decision. And I think this is what's really bothering the fans. The fans hate this team right now, at least the ones on social media. They hate this team. They are miserable every day. The whining, the complaining. I've given up really trying to battle them or debate them on social media because it's a losing cause. The calls for every day firing a hitting coach, firing the manager, firing Stearns, they just want to punish somebody because they feel so miserable. Have become loud and consistent, and they're kind of numbing. And I think you will get, maybe even after this week, and now that the weather is hopefully going to turn nice and there's going to be summer and some other distractions, and let's face it, the best friend to David Stearns of the Mets right now are actually twofold. Yankees going through their own struggles. And the Yankees will be the story of the summer until football season. And let's face it, the Knicks and the Knicks run, which should continue for at least a couple more weeks, especially after winning on Saturday night, going up 3-0 in the Eastern Conference Finals, the Knicks could give them a ton of cover up until at least mid-June. And who knows, maybe they turn some things around, some of the kids start to play better, and the optimism of a better tomorrow materializes. But over the offseason, this was a team that was in the middle. They still had these core players that they've had since 2018, 2019. Stearns decided to move away from them. He wanted to do a bridge type of situation with the Polankos or the Robert Jr. and what have you, and it failed miserably, mainly because of injury. And now they have started to incorporate the tomorrow. Now, I think that the debate on X has been, well, this shows that they had no plan because this is a panic move. And, you know, I even mentioned, like, all along I felt that the plan was to either incorporate these young players into the mix or trade them. I mean, you're not going to hold on to everybody. You started to see them trade some of the lower-level talent that was part of last deadline's sell-off. And, you know, really, I mean, that's that one reliever in Baltimore that everybody likes to talk about. Was it Munoz? I have to bring him up here, that they traded in the Cedric Mullins deal. I know Rico Garcia, Anthony Nunez, I'm sorry, who actually, believe it or not, has started to come back down to earth. So you're not hearing about him. He's got a 4.94 ERA. I mean, he's a nice arm. I mean, live bullpen arms that throw hard, you'll get more of them. If you're a quality organization, you'll get more of them. And, you know, I think Rico Garcia, I first guessed that I didn't like when they got rid of him. But again, these are bullpen arms that will be up and down and will, you know, there'll be more of them. Nothing that the Mets gave up last year really came back to haunt them. And so far, they've started to incorporate these young players into the mix. Now, that debate with the fans is, well, Stearns doesn't have a plan. They're panicking. And I think the anger when I've brought up that, hey, it's not bad that in the situation where they've lost four of their starting, you know, players that were in the starting lineup on opening day, Robert Jr. Well, let's just look at this. They've lost Robert Jr. They've lost Lindor. They've lost Alvarez, and they've lost Polanco. So they've lost 4/9 of their positional player starters, bats that were top 10 positional player in the league in Lindor. Really high-level component player in Polanco, a promising catcher that you thought was going to have a breakout season in Alvarez, and a bit of a wild card in Robert Jr., who was going to stopgap center field for Ewing and Benj until these guys are ready. Well, that didn't work, and the stopgap wasn't needed because, you know, you're starting to see Ewing and Benj do what, you know, you hope that they can do consistently for, you know, a 10-year career here in New York. So, you know, this whole youth movement was kind of sprung on them. Now, let me quote, and this was an interesting tweet I got on X a couple of days ago, and it was really what started to spur my thought about this show and, you know, how I was going to frame and talk about the end of this first third of the season. So WM8125. So WM8125, I don't know his name, he writes to me, I've been a fan since 1976. This organization is trying to toe the line of rebuilding and selling tickets. It's very hard to do, and most can't do it. The fan base would be patient if you level with them. Spending $380 million and raising ticket prices can make the fans a little testy, don't you think? Yes, raising ticket prices and spending big money can make the fans testy. You have your right not to go to the ball game. I think the team never was, and I don't know if it was just because of selling tickets, but obviously it's a process to an outcome. The team was never going to come out and say they were rebuilding, but they've been honest, and Stearns since day one has been honest. If you really listen, that young players, and this was said very early on when maybe one of his first conversations with the media, the GM meetings in 2023, before the 2024 season, where he said, you know, New York has to understand that we're going to incorporate young players into the mix. Because there's always been a thought that you can't really do that in New York. You can't do, and you hear a lot of this on social media, this isn't Milwaukee, which is such an ignorant situation. Because a lot of Mets fans would trade the last 10 years of the Brewers, even with the same payroll and the same payroll restrictions, with what they've been going through with the Mets, with many front office types in charge and a couple of owners, despite the money. So maybe it's part of that where the fans have this feeling where they really need to have some kind of conversation about where the team is going. But to me, it's really obvious. You can compete and win when you have money and spend money. And also, if you have the proper pipeline of young players, you could start to incorporate them in, and they've done that. Now, you don't have enough young players to make up for every single injury you've incurred. When you lose 4/9 of your starting lineup, and you've brought up A.J. Ewing as the one positional player, Nick Morabito, who has yet to get a hit, but profiles more as a fourth outfielder, maybe a cheaper version of Tyrone Taylor or somebody that could hit lefties. That's not enough to overcome the loss of Lindor, Alvarez, the black hole that was center field. You've addressed that a little bit with Ewing, who got a couple of hits today and made a nice throw to the plate. And the fact that, you know, yes, you did give up Nimmo and Alonso, and I know what a lot of fans are saying, well, those are RBI guys that certainly could help in this lineup because that's what this lineup is missing. Yes, it is. But you weren't willing to commit to those guys for the next 5 years. I mean, that's what it really came down to. And we've talked about this a lot, and I know it's a conversation that we really shouldn't still be having because it's kind of obvious. And both Alonso and Nimmo have started to show they are who they are. They're guys that are going to be 780 to 800 OPS, middle of the order RBI bats. There's tons of value in that. But at their age, and they're, you know, north of 30, the Mets weren't looking to invest big dollars in that. They were looking to maybe look at what the next phase is. And some of that was potentially Benjamin Ewing, who right now look more profiled as a top-of-the-order energizer bunny, on-base percentage, speed outfield situation, which is exciting. Doesn't address some of the other deficiencies in the lineup. When Lindor comes back, part of it will be addressed. But I think with Polanco and Robert Jr., Polanco with the Achilles issue might be a lost season for him, not a lost career. With Robert Jr. with the lumbar strain, I'm not expecting anything out of him. I think the other thing that this season was predicated on, and this is part of how you're going to look at the rest of 2026, because I think the rest of 2026, you want to be competitive. You're not just going to tank. You're not just going to rip the thing apart tomorrow and tank. That's not what it is. The Mets want to compete. Yes, they want to sell some tickets. I don't know how many people will show up to Citi Field. They will for some, you know, nice weekends, you know, nice opponents coming into town. Maybe they play well and you get some homestands where fans get a little into it. Obviously, season tickets have been sold, but individual walk-up or whatever seats haven't been sold, it's going to be tough. And during the week, especially with bad weather, it's not going to be great. And once school comes back into session after Labor Day, September might be rough. But part of the rest of this year is you really need to see what you have. Instead of a situation where I'm not even talking about, hey, this team needs A, B, C, D. That was a conversation that over the last couple of weeks I thought about. It was, you know, if they had played a little bit better, thought about having, hey, how can you get the healthy players back? And then when they get back, how can you reinforce this roster? There is no situation right now, unless they go on some wild run, and the competition in June is going to be far more fierce than anything you saw this month with the Braves and the Phillies. I mean, real tests this team is going to have. Unless this team goes on a wild run, there's no situation where I am going to advocate them giving up any kind of prospect capital to get a short-term reinforcement, an Aroldis Chapman, a Tarek Skubal, or anything like that. That's just not what this year is going to turn into. That was going to be a debate I thought we were going to have on my non-prediction predictions. But that's not a debate you could have. Right now, it's more likely you're going to be talking about what they could get for Freddie Peralta or Brooks Raley or maybe Luke Weaver or maybe Clay Holmes. And I think the Mets can use this opportunity. And because they have money and because they could go back out in the free agent market and possibly even re-sign some of these players when they trade them, they could then continue to stock the farm system and maybe even on the positional side, get themselves a young player that's ready. And I think that's the key. Can you get young players that are ready to contribute in a way to the big league roster now? Because the guys that you were relying on, that when you gave up Nimmo, when you gave up McNeil, and you gave up Alonso, and I think really the one that you gave up that you probably could have kept and could have helped you, McNeil, maybe it was the only one at this point that I always say, did you really have to do that? Because I understood Alonso to a degree, and I understood Nimmo to a degree, as much as I loved him with the back end of that contract. McNeil was a different story, but whatever. The guys that you asked to kind of start to pick up some of that slack, Beatty, Vientos, and Alvarez, are just not consistent. They're just not consistent. You're asking guys who are seven in the order hitters, or maybe even players that should be borderline part-time or 300 to 350 at-bat component players to be core members of the offense and hit in the middle of the order, and it just doesn't work. And in the case of Alvarez, maybe that's the one that makes the most sense to fit that profile, but he's always hurt. And yeah, they've been freaky injuries, but sometimes players, that's what they become. They become injury prone for whatever reason. And I think in a lot of ways, the Mets are going to be similar to what you saw with the Giants last year and the Cardinals, where they sold off a little bit. I mean, the Cardinals were more of a rebuild. The Giants were kind of a half measure where they sold some of their veterans. Rodgers was one of the relievers that the Mets got and sent over some. And that's the key. You know, you don't want to just get quantity of pieces that could help your roster in the future. You may, especially with a guy like Peralta or maybe even Clay Holmes, because they're starting pitchers, get something of impact. Something of real impact. Even if it's a piece that potentially you wind up trading in a bigger deal down the road. That's where you really are going to see the Mets. The Mets are going to compete. They're going to try to go out there and every night, you know, give you an idea that they could win. I mean, this offense right now with the 4A that's still littered throughout the lineup, it's going to be tough. But if you got Lindor and Polanco back with Ewing and Bench in the lineup with a healthy Soto, with Bichette finally riding himself, yeah, Vientos and Beatty still are going to be up and down, although Beatty's had a pretty good month. It's not a horrible lineup. I mean, the scary part is, even this month where they've played well, you take away the 16 runs that they scored against the Nats the other night, about five or six of them probably off of the positional player pitching. They're only averaging about four runs a game. I mean, they are really a bad offensive team. And the pitching, and that's the shame, the pitching has been, this could be extremely ugly if the pitching wasn't as good as it was. I mean, that's what people aren't recognizing. The pitching has been good. And to me, the young players, the young pitchers, the incorporating of these young pitchers, the fact that I could watch McLain one night, Scott another, Tong a third night, Zach Thornton a fourth night. I'm not saying everybody's going to turn out to be Jacob deGrom or Tom Seaver here. That's not what I'm saying. But quality major league pitchers. I saw somebody the other day tweet, this is Zach Thornton. He's just a fourth starter. Well, guess what, guys? There's value in that. If you could come out of your prospect base right now, out of your prospect base, conceivably, next year, you could have McLain, you could have Scott, you could have Tong, you could have Thornton, and maybe Winiger. You have five young pitchers that could fit a starting role. I'm not saying they're all going to be top of the rotation, but give you enough depth and quality. And really, at that point, you need to go out and get yourself a veteran arm. That's why I think Clay Holmes and potentially finding out if you could extend Clay Holmes when he comes back, because I think he'd be perfect veteran arm for this group, is so important. To me, that's wonderful. Now, and look, Thornton wasn't great, but he showed some promise there in his start. And Tong made you wonder, is he more of a bullpen arm? That was something that came up maybe the other day. So really at this point, we know that this is a season and this is a team that just doesn't have it. Bad luck, injuries, you want to say some poor roster construction, some decisions they made in the offseason that didn't work. I think ultimately, because they've been in between for so long and because they haven't really been able to incorporate young players, and I really think this valley that we're seeing here, a lot of it has to do with the lack of, and we've talked about it a lot over the first third of the season. It has to do with the fact that this team, up until this Benj Ewing promotion, outside of Alonso and McNeil, their positional prospects have been total dog blank. Really. I mean, Beatty's okay, nothing special. Vientos is maddening. He could go on a run and look like baby Pete Alonso, and then he could look lost. I mean, he makes big plays at first, and he hasn't been bad at first base, and then he just botches an easy ground ball. I mean, that's who he is. And Alvarez is the ultimate quagmire. I mean, Alvarez is the poster child, I think, for the disappointment of a lot of the young players that have come through. Now, Ewing and Benj, and, you know, Ewing was drafted before Stearns got here, but part of that is player development. We'll see if they turn the corner. So really, at the end of the day, here's what I think you're going to see the rest of the year. They're going to wind up selling Peralta, really, maybe Peterson. I'm not saying you're going to get a ton for each one of them. Maybe Luke Weaver gets put out there into the market. You know, I don't know about controllable arm like Brazenbaum. You know, do they look at some of the relievers? Do they look at the reliever market and see what they could get because they have some younger arms down there? They have Lambert, they have Dylan Ross, Ben Simon. I mean, there's some names down there in the minors that could become part of it. I talk about Jonathan Pintaro and stuff like that. Do they trade those guys? I mean, do they look, you know, you could look at that. I don't think anybody else on the big league roster really has much value. Bichette has a no trade clause. I do think that potentially if they get hot, Vientos and Beatty, I wouldn't be surprised if Viento becomes somebody they look to trade. I think at this point you want to try to sell as high as you can on those guys because I quite honestly do not think that they're long-term solutions. So the rest of the next, I would say, 8 weeks leading into the August 3rd deadline, you got to start to think about what you're going to get for those guys and look at the young kids, see their performance, see who's a keeper, see who's a serious part of 2027. Because I don't think the Mets are going to go. And I look at this dialogue. Well, are they competing now or rebuilding? No, they're building a baseball team that could compete and win and still incorporate some homegrown talent into it. That's what you do. You don't have to do, everything is a binary black or white in this world today, and it's just not. If you need to do a full throttle rebuild, you'll know. And the fact that they have this farm system that they've been building up is the only reason they don't have to. Because if they didn't have this top farm system that was ranked as high as number one, I believe ESPN ranked it number one, they'd be up the creek without a paddle. And we'd be having a totally different conversation. And the reality is this, and you guys better really get this through your head if you haven't yet. You can't buy an entire roster. I still see people saying, you know, fire Stearns, fire Mendoza, bring in a manager, you know, trade for this guy. You know, we'll go out and over the offseason, you know, spend more money. Like, the guy's going to spend money, but, I mean, first, look at the free agent market. Go to SpotTrack and look at who's a free agent this coming offseason. It's not overly sexy. You can only spend money on players if they're available. If they're not available, you can't spend money on them. You can't steal them from another team. You got to be able to feel confident. The big win the rest of the year is the Mets feel confident that in Benj and Ewing, they have some kind of outfield foundation along with Soto, because then you have, and I still think Polanco will be an answer going forward, you have Alvarez potentially, Beatty or Vientos, you got to figure out those guys. I think Alvarez survives, the other two I'm not so sure. And then you could see how around with free agency and trades, how you could build up the rest of the offense. Because what the team needs, it's not easy to get, and it's not in the farm system right now, which is middle-of-the-order run production. And I know what you're going to say. They had that with Nemo and Alonso. They weren't going to sign them for them to do that for a couple of years and be albatrosses on the back end. We could debate and argue it. Maybe the Mets will be wrong about that so far. What they're producing now at this age, it ain't going to get any better 3 years from now or even a year from now. So just keep that in mind. You know, and maybe there's some of that adjustment period for both of them if they're leaving the, you know, team that originally drafted them. But we'll see. So, you know, that's where we're at. It's not what we want. It's not what we talked about and planned. I don't believe Stearns wanted to be 22 and 30 and already talking about selling some of his acquisitions like Peralta here on Memorial Day. But that's where they're at. And it's not a waste of a season if you could incorporate the young players and get answers. And you could do it in a way where now the pressure's really off. Let these kids play. Let Ewing play. Let him go through the struggles. Let Benj continue to go through the struggles. Let Tong go through the struggles. Let Scott go through the struggles. Let McClain get his head beat in. Like I said over at Extra Innings, what impressed me is the other night he got his head beat in, gave him a couple of unearned runs, but he got them, through five or six innings. I mean, Ron Darling talked about that in his book, his first book, where, you know, as a young player, you're taught, hey, if you don't have it that day, provide value for the team. That showed me a lot on that. You know, let these kids learn. Use this season as a test tube. Does it matter if they win 80 games, 81, 77? It's the same. Whether you win 75, 76, or 80, 81, you're in that same baseball purgatory. And if by some chance, all of a sudden, they start to play better and they get closer to 500 and the league comes back down to them and now we're in the middle of July, we reserve the right to change our minds. However, I still don't see a team that I would invest in by giving up significant prospect capital at the deadline. I just wouldn't. I don't think there's any scenario where my mind would change. And I know what everybody's saying. Hey, if you've been listening to this show, Mike, you know, you were talking about it this time 2 years ago, ripping the team apart. It's not working. You know, what you see with Alonso gone, Nimmo gone. I talked about this before the OMG summer, and then all of a sudden it changed. And for a calendar year, they were the best team in baseball. They came within 2 games of going to the World Series. Well, that's not a long time ago, but we're not in that world anymore. And it does feel like a long time ago. So the plan is that give the kids a chance. And out of those original, OG kids of Alvarez, Beatty, Vientos, might be time to start thinking about selling high, selling off the veterans, getting some talent. I'm not just saying low A talent. I think it'd be nice to get some talent that could potentially help on the roster immediately or close to ready talent. I don't think you should do quantity deals. You know, think about what the Mets gave up for Tyler Rogers. It's a quantity deal. I wouldn't do those kind of deals. And I don't think the Mets have to deal anybody. They don't want to. They don't have to. You don't have to give up Brooks Raley unless you get a deal that makes sense for you. So anyway, let's hear what you have to say. Let's go to the mailbag here on this Memorial Day weekend. We'll be back with mailbag right after this. All right, we're back. Let's get to what you guys are thinking because it always makes the show better. One of the best additions, I think, to this show over the last... I think I started this late last year or probably more in the off season and really amped it up is the mailbag, which is a combination of comments on Apple and Spotify and tweets and a lot of emails and the chat room. And I try to get to everybody. And if I don't get to everybody, I apologize. I'm trying to keep the show as neat and tidy as you possibly can. And I scour everything. So anyway, let's start off. I actually had missed one last week, and I want to address it. Ben wrote, right around the Subway Series. I've been following your recent post, he means on X, downplaying the rumors regarding Stearns having his job in jeopardy. But it seems like his job is in much more danger than we all thought. And basically it was, and let me make sure I get her name right. Chelsea Janes. She took over from Martino on SNY. So anyway, she had wrote a couple of weeks ago before the Subway Series, maybe a few days before the Subway Series, that, you know, Stern's job could be in jeopardy. And it was a clear case of educated speculation. There was no rumor or reporting behind it. She was very much skilled, as most writers are, at putting their opinion out there, but tying it up because they have some sort of affiliation with the newspaper or network as to it being a rumor. And they cover themselves because, no, they didn't say it was a rumor. They put it in a way where it's that gray area. So you really can't get yourself in trouble. And Ben writes that, you know, he took it seriously because she wouldn't put that out there without cause because she's an established writer. I disagree, Ben, because I think she did put it out there and covered herself as educated speculation. And he writes, to be honest, if they do fire Stearns, I'd lose a lot of faith in Cohen. It's a bad process to fire an executive you coveted for 3 years after only 100 bad games. We've already seen reports that Bichette's signing was more Cohen-driven than Stearns-driven, and I'm concerned about having a meddling owner who's too focused on the reputation with his rich peers. What Joel Sherman and John Heyman are writing or the noise from the loud minority on social media. I sincerely hope he isn't firing Stearns just to play Uncle Stevie character for the fans again. Most of the fan base doesn't understand how a modern front office is run. I mean, that is completely well said, and like I said, and I've said on Twitter a lot, I saw it this morning, and actually Ernie Dove kind of alluded to that when somebody had mentioned on social media this morning how the Mets should fire Troy Snitker because the offense stinks, because it's Troy Snitker's fault that they got 4A players up and down the lineup. One of the most overrated things is coaching. It's like blaming the iPad for you not being able to hit. When you fire Stearns, you blow up the whole organization. He is not a GM. He's a president of baseball operations who duly is acting like a GM. But let's remember, he's got people working for him who are part of that decision-making process. He's not just going out and doing this in a vacuum. If you just go and do it yourself, go to the Mets directory and look at the baseball operations. You have Edward Brizuela, Jonathan Strangio, Ben Zosmer, Andy Green, Carlos Beltran, J.D. Martinez, Chris Gross, head of Vice President Amateur International Scouting. I mean, if anything, Brizuela and Strangio, you know, Jonathan Strangio is kind of like this in the shadows guy. Their assistant general manager to Stearns. They're probably making as many of these moves as Stearns. So you want to get rid of all those guys? I'm not saying that they're, you know, end-all, be-all, but you'll probably get rid of Chris Gross. You're blowing up the entire baseball operations department if you fire Stearns. You're not just firing Stearns. And he's right. Ben is right. It goes to show you that the man has no patience, that he's not in this for the long haul. And he coveted Stearns for a while. Stearns was highly regarded. Nobody questioned the move. I know there's some debate about how he could handle the big market. Sandy Alderson did say one thing I thought was well said when he came back temporarily when Cohen took over. One of the biggest challenges of a big market executive is the largesse in front of you. Just because you have it doesn't mean you spend it. And I don't think that Stearns does that. I also am not so sure I could say that Cohen is the reason they sign big free agents. The baseball operations department has to be on board. He's going to finalize any kind of deal that's that kind of money because the owners get involved no matter what. Did he pressure Stearns into pivoting to Bo Bichette? I don't know. I mean, I know that there's some speculation out there. I don't know. But I think that that kind of made sense because they were chasing him all along and they were looking for different types of hitters to make up for what they were planning on doing, which was moving on from Alonso and Nimmo and McNeil. And they thought there were different ways to score runs. And I think on paper, Polanco, a hitter that was maybe an overpay, but more on a short-term deal because that's what they want. Guy that got a clutch hit, seemed to hit well in the postseason, good component player with some pop. I think the whole first base thing was part of it, but I think that they could easily pop them at the DH. And then Bichette, guy who has some pop, hits for average, more contact, just came out of playing well in the World Series. I mean, I don't think you could really question those moves per se. You really can't at this point. So I think Ben, you know, and shame on me for not reading this last week, but it's still pretty relevant with how things have gone over the last 7 to 10 days. He also writes, furthermore, the Ewing promotion feels like a move made by a president who knows they're on the hot seat. Stearns was visibly more testy when he had his last press conference than we ever seen, which only adds to my unease. I worry that if we move on now, we'll end up a worse candidate. The organization will suffer in drafting, development, and infrastructure. If you move on from Stearns, the industry will not respect the job, the position. You'll get somebody, but nobody of quality is going to come here and work for a modern-day George Steinbrenner. I mean, look, you want to compare it. Knicks are in the conference finals. They fired Tom Thibodeau. That was a similar type of reaction about how the owner got involved. We really don't know really what happened. I know he is involved. I mean, that's clear. And it's worked out so far. But, I mean, there was talk that if Mike Brown didn't make it to the finals, or even if he didn't win a championship, that they'd fire him because there was a more desirable coach in Jason Kidd. Remember, when the Knicks were looking to hire a head coach, Mike Brown wasn't their first choice. Many others were on the table and took themselves out of it because they don't want to be in the hot seat of that job and that pressure and that, you know, lack of a safety net. Nobody wants to go in. Yeah, you get paid. You get a multi-year deal. You get fired. You still get paid. But your career gets thrown into the toilet. Look at David Fizdale's career. His coaching career is in the toilet because of his tenure in New York. Derek Fisher, and I know that there were other mitigating factors there, but I'm saying that and I'm pointing that out because that's what you're going to do if you fire Stearns here. So good job, Ben. Sorry I missed that last week. But really good job on that whole thing. Let's keep going here. Let's see what else we got in the hopper. Let's see. Thomas writes, you're way underrating Jason Bay. His OPS was well above 900 before coming to the Mets, which is substantially higher than Bichette's before coming to the Mets. He also was a better fielder. His fall for the Mets was massive to the degree that it was hard to believe. He was an absolute star before he came to New York. So I guess this is Thomas talking about how I'm trying to go back what I said. Basically, there was some comparisons how Bichette is turning out to be a dud like Jason Bay. I mean, Jason Bay came to the Mets, was a below league average hitter his first year, got hurt, you know, had the concussion and everything. But here was a guy that his second year with the Mets in 2012, he had a 536 OPS. I mean, he completely forgot how to hit. And the year before he came to the Mets, you know, he had 36 home runs, 119 RBIs, 384 on base, and it was a really good player. You know, playing at Fenway Park. Good player in Pittsburgh. I guess he was a star. I never felt of him that way. I felt he was a component player, maybe because he was a quiet guy. But if you go to his 2009 season, I do remember there being some debate about him versus Matt Holliday, and there was some concern about him, you know, coming to the Mets. And, you know, one of the other things I think that Jason Bay, because when the Mets signed him, he was the age of 31. It's very similar to maybe what the concerns are with Pete Alonso. Righty batters, when their bats slow down, north of the age of 30, go awry. So I guess the real debate was how good Jason Bay was, and he's correct. I mean, Jason Bay, just to give you a perspective here, Jason Bay, let me give you, let's just look at Jason Bay real quick. Up until, for the period from 2004 to the year, you know, 2009, that's age 25 to 30, he averaged 30 home runs, 99 RBIs, a 375 on-base percentage, a 131 OPS plus. Very good player. Not a Hall of Famer, very good player. Got some MVP votes. Did it largely in obscurity in Pittsburgh. Played well for about a year, you know, and a half with the Red Sox. Red Sox brought him in 2008 down the stretch. Wound up not re-signing him, and, you know, they were the smart ones. They didn't invest the money. They went in a different direction. Bill Meyer on Twitter. Here's his two cents on the Mets. The good, young prospects pipeline looks promising. The position player prospects look to be legit, impactful, maybe even elite. The bad, it's going to be a long year. The Braves have taken off and are likely gone. The injuries are going to hamper a real run. The offseason acquisitions look underwhelming, to say the least. Stearns will have to reassess how they take chances on injury-prone players. The ugly playoffs look like a long shot that could even wind up sub-500 team. Mendoza could be dead man walking. The two things I'll bring up from that comment. Thank you, Bill. Thanks for interacting on X, and thanks for listening. Yes, the Braves are gone. As far as assessing injury-prone players, I don't see how Polanco and a bursitis is an injury-prone situation. I think the one you could question is Robert Jr., who had some injuries. The lumbar strain is not something that I think just all of a sudden came out. A back injury is something that could have been percolating. It's a serious back injury, so that one they may want to look at. But it was they really didn't give up much for him. I don't think Acuña is going to come back to haunt them. And they lost $20 million because they could just get out of this thing at the end of the year. I think there's like maybe a couple million in opt-out. They just won't pick up the option. So I think that it's, yeah, I agree with you. You always want to take injuries into equation. I think that's exactly what they did with trying to get out of Nimmo and Alonso. So, I mean, to your point, Bill, I think they did it with the Nimmo and Alonso moves. I just don't think the fans like to hear it, and they could not, it might not turn out to be, you know, something that, you know, something that ultimately, you know, looks good for the team. So we'll see how that goes. James Schwartz writes, Mike, I could listen to you every day for hours. The New York accent plus the breakdown of players with a spin that just isn't what the collective writes makes you my favorite Mets media guy. James, I had to put that out there because you wrote that over on the Substack, the premium content, and I appreciate that. He wrote after Bichette had his breakout games in D.C., should this game be the breakout for Bichette? Mets fans will fall in love with him very quickly. With Benj doing what he's doing at the top of the order, if Bichette begins being the guy his career says he is, this team begins to resemble the vision Stearns had when he made it. Soto will be Soto. That's a damn good top of the order. When Lindor comes back, this becomes a much better hitting team. And I have a question for you. Ewing. If this kid is what he's shown so far, how does he not go to the top of the order too? I think he has a better swing and an eye to be the number one guy in the order. Do they keep Benj there too, making it Ewing and Benj 1-2 with Soto, then Lindor, then Bichette, or do you keep Ewing down at 6-7? He's pushing to be considered a leadoff guy in my mind. I love these kids, though. Hope to see them roaming the outfield for the next decade. Ewing at the top of the order makes a ton of sense. I mean, I know he's been striking out a lot. I like what I see. He had a couple hits today. I think he's a guy that's willing to take a walk when he has to. I think it's going to be tricky with the lefty-lefty situation with Benj. So maybe, and if Benj starts to show some power, you do Ewing, Bichette, Soto. They really, at that point, what do you put Polanco at 4, Benj 5. I got to actually rethink that. You have Ewing leading off, then you have Lindor, then you have Soto, then you have Bichette, then you have Benj, then you have your Polanco, and then your 7-8-9. And that gives you kind of lefty-righty with the switch hitters in there. I think ultimately you're going to need some righty pop, and that's not always easy to find. That's why the whole Alonso debate continues to linger. But James, I've been putting that one. I know I didn't respond to you in the comments, but I've been putting that one up for today, mainly because you gave me such a beautiful compliment. How can I not take that compliment about you liking my New York accent? So, you know, we'll see this. Nick writes about Gary Carter. Mike, I agree that Gary Carter's number 8 should definitely be retired. Additionally, I've felt for years now that Mookie Wilson's number 1 should also have been retired, based on what he's meant to the franchise and the fans from the earliest playing days for those pathetic Tory-led squads to his invaluable contributions to the outfield, the plate, and on the base pads as a huge part of the dominant championship and contending teams of the mid to late 80s as a coach, minor league manager, and team community ambassador after his playing days. If you have any rapport with Jay Horwitz, please mention how strongly a huge chunk of Mets diehard fans feel about getting the ball rolling on having Mookie's number 1 retired. Thanks. Nick, thanks. So I do have Jay's number. I don't know if he'd really care what I have to say, but I could pass that along. I know Jay for a fact, and I wrote about this. I did a free post for everybody for Memorial Day weekend about Gary Carter. I know the debate about Morabito getting temporarily assigned number 8, Gary not being retired. If you want to go over to the Substack, you can read more in detail. But for those that are listening now, I'll give it to you real quick. Gary Carter's number is not retired for a couple of reasons, and I know this for a fact. Anthony DeComo wrote about it, but I did some of my own research. Part of it is that he's a member of the Hall of Fame as a Montreal Expo, and it makes sense. He played 12 years in Montreal and by far was the best catcher in the league. I mean, I didn't realize how good he was until if you go back to my piece over at Substack. I mean, he's not even close. Carlton Fisk is a close second, and it's not even close to what Gary was as a catcher. I mean, this is post Johnny Bench, of course. Johnny Bench was, you know, on the way out at that point. Post, you know, Big Red Machine and all that other stuff. And, you know, of course, if Thurman Munson had survived, maybe there would be some debate. But Thurman was nowhere near the catcher that Gary Carter was. Let's be fair. So he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame as a Montreal Expo. And I didn't understand that when it happened as a Mets fan, you know, 2 decades ago. It angers you, but it makes sense. That's number one. Number two, I think there's some concern amongst the Hall of Fame committee that they're going too quickly and retiring too many numbers after not doing anything. So they're making up for lost time, but how does it look, you know, every year retiring someone's number? Hernandez, Strawberry, Gooden, Wright, Beltran later this year. When does it stop? So Gary's kind of the one that's the odd man out at that point. I don't think the fact that he's not alive plays into it, but it does change the dynamic of the ceremony and the marketing aspect. That's my opinion. I'm not hearing that from anybody on the committee. I'm just putting that out there. I think that I would throw that out there. So when you put all that together, that's where you're at. Too many at one time. He's a Montreal Expo. And statistically, he only had about a year and a half worth of, you know, maybe 2 years if you want to count the whole 86. And you could argue he struggled a lot. And those were good Houston pitchers. So let's be fair, in the championship series in 86, he struggled a lot in the championship series 86. But without his hit off of Charlie Kerfeld and without his 2-home run game against the Red Sox at Fenway in game 4, Mets don't win the World Series. That game 3 was critically important. Game 5 was critically important. That hit off of Kerfeld was critically important. that home, those two home runs in game four, even the series. So, you know, despite the fact that he was starting to show the wear and tear that naturally a catcher would, you got two good years, 87, 88, 89. They were declining years for a catcher. He was still a big part of that team. They don't win a championship without him. And as much as Keith Hernandez showed the baseball world that the Mets was serious, Gary was the one that said, hey, these guys are ready to compete in the deep end of the pool. I don't think you could put the final check mark when you have your, 30th anniversary here now, 40th anniversary. It's the 40th anniversary, I'm sorry, of the 86 team. I don't think you can put your final cap on this thing. And you do have to start to think about putting 86 in the closet for good. Honestly, no more ceremonies after this year. And I'll talk about that later this summer. You got to put it in the closet for good. But until you retire Carter's number, I think it's incomplete. So, yeah, I get it. Too many at one time, the expo thing. Put them up there in the rafters. If you're going to take it out of circulation because of the politics of it, you might as well put it up in the rafters. It's the same thing. To me, it doesn't make sense. So as far as Mookie, Nick, I think the Hall of Fame and him being a Mets Hall of Famer, and I'm going to check. I think Mookie's in the Mets Hall of Fame. I'm almost positive. Let me check before I make a statement here. I don't pay attention to this stuff as much as I probably should. Yeah, Mookie's in the Mets Hall of Fame. So I checked it here. So I think that that's what the honor of what you describe with Mookie, I think that's more of a Mets Hall of Famer. I get what you're saying, and I understand. For a generation of Mets fans, Mookie was a beacon of light, energy, speed. I mean, analytics wouldn't be kind to him because he wasn't a guy that walked a lot, so I don't know how he would be viewed in today's game. But yes, I think Mookie was a good Hall of Fame Met. I'm not sure he's someone that his number's retired. Jason writes, Mike, been listening to you for about a year and appreciate your neutral, level-headedness approach to how the team operates and performs. I've been trying not to overreact, but the writing is on the wall that this could be a lost season, which leads to a sell or hold type of trade deadline. Stearns has already shown he's not sentimental. He moved Pete, Nimmo, and Diaz without blinking, and all three ended up hurt or starting to underperform. So in my opinion, these were not bad moves. If this becomes a sell deadline, I don't see him hesitating on Peralta, Holmes, or bullpen arms like Raley and Minter either. My bigger question is Soto. He's paid, so he's not saying anything publicly, but he's a competitor, and this isn't what he signed up for. Do you think Stearns proactively sits down with him to walk through the rebuild plan and reassure him that he's the centerpiece, part of a bigger plan to develop pitching young players like Ben Ewing, or does he just let this track record do the talking? I think those conversations probably were had when he signed up. I think Soto's enjoying himself. I personally think Soto's a guy, and I know you guys are going to hate this, and I don't think this is an indictment. I think Soto wants to win, but I don't think Soto's at the point in his career where if the next 2 years he's putting up numbers on a sub-500 team, he's going to cry. I think Soto worries about his numbers and his Hall of Fame resume a lot. Now, does that get hurt playing on this team versus if he was in the middle of the Yankees lineup with Judge? We know the answer there. This is a naked lineup. By the way, he's locked in. It's a shame he was out with the flu today. I don't think he's there yet. At the end of year five, he might say, hey, I want out of here. Don't, you know, up my salary and they'll let him walk. Or maybe they'll figure something out. He's making a lot of money. I don't see how you could trade him. These two are married. That decision he made when he signed with the Mets a couple of off seasons ago, you know, he had to think in the back of his head, this could happen at some point in his 15 years with the club. So, you know, it happened a little sooner. I don't think they're rebuilding. I think they're just going to have to take, look at the Braves. They had a bad season last year and they're running away with the National League East this year. If you have the components and the young players that are ready and you do the proper development, you have the proper budget and money to spend, this could be just a one-off year. And I think it will be a one-off year, to be honest. Annie writes, garbage. I've been trying to accept this year for what it is, but that doesn't make the current situation any less frustrating or embarrassing. If we had been told the day Soto signed that the following two seasons would play out like this, it would have been unthinkable. This is an absolute disaster, and there's no way to spin it otherwise. I've noticed on X that you tend to be much tougher on the Yankees than our own team, the Mets. I believe it's time to direct the same level of scrutiny towards the Mets. Given the money, ownership, market, and expectations involved, this team is on track to be one of the most disappointing in MLB history. One is enough enough. I want to see you hold their feet to the fire more. Even if you aren't calling for people to be fired, we need to know when they finally be time to win. It feels like the timeline keeps getting pushed back year after year. Is this just going to have be forever? The fans deserve better than a false bill of goods every year, and they should demand more. This is nonsense, and I believe it's time to start holding the organization to a higher standard. So, I joke around a lot on X about how the Yankees are covered. You know, regular baseball, you know, a Yankee situation is a regular course of baseball business. With the Mets, it's a crisis. I'm not going to get into that. A lot of what I do on X sometimes is to just have some fun. Yankee fans are easy to poke. But as far as the bigger comment here by Andy, thank you for writing in, Andy. I'm not saying it's acceptable for them to lose. What I'm saying is I understand what they did this offseason. I'm willing to support it. I don't think they expected to be here. And to be quite honest, I don't know what you could expect when you lose 4/9 of your starting positional players, including a major starting pitcher. And, you know, you're incorporating a bunch of young players at the same time. I mean, this is like, you know, one thing to have the replacements for a couple of weeks, but to have the replacements for 2.5 months, which I don't think Lindor will be back and Polanco will be back till late June, maybe the All-Star break, it's asking a lot. And I don't think that they should be this bad. They've been playing much better in May. I think April things just spiraled during that 12-game losing streak. Look, if they had just won three or four, and they could have easily won three or four more games, there's a lot of bad luck during that streak. They're 22-30. They're 26-26 at this point. They're 500, and we're probably having a different conversation, but they're not. Why I'm not crazy upset is I don't see this as the light not at the end of the tunnel situation. It's not like they have a bunch of veterans and a bad farm system and they have nowhere to go. I mean, the fact that you've incorporating these young players is exciting and it's necessary. Now, if this goes bad, and I think, you know, Stearns is on the clock now. I mean, Stearns has next year's 2 more years after this year. If this next round of young players doesn't go well, and they are floundering for the next couple of years, he's probably not going to get a contract extension. He's probably out, and it'll go, and it will go down as the most disappointing executive hire in the history of the franchise, maybe in the history of baseball. I know Chaim Bloom had his own issues in Boston, but this would go down as highly disappointing, especially considering the guy grew up a Mets fan. He'd go down in Mets history in a way that I'm sure no Mets fan who ever dreamed of having the big chair running this team would want to go down. So I am holding them accountable. I think it'll be interesting how they, and it's really good, Andy, it's going to be important how they play out the next 8 to 10 weeks, how they handle this deadline with them being out of it, and how they set themselves up for 2027. Because when I say rebuild, they're not rebuilding. They're just incorporating young players that are ready to contribute, hopefully. Not ready to contribute in 3 years. You know, we don't want, not that Benji is going to be, or Ewing is going to be a finished product now. They could continue to get better, but you want them to have a baseline. The problem with Alvarez, Beatty, and Vientos is outside of some small sample size. And actually, Vientos had the most successful baseline out of the three of them with how he contributed in 2024. They have had streaks of a month or maybe a couple of months, but never a baseline of success where you felt comfortable with them having the mantle passed to them. Stearns, one mistake, he passed the mantle to these three kids that all I heard was from the fans, give them a chance, and now they got their chance, and they're either hurt or underperforming. I mean, I don't think you could criticize him for that other than the fact that I deep down didn't think they were solutions. Why I wanted Alonso back over the offseason, and I wasn't as worried with Cohen's money as at the end of the contract, but at some point, especially with not us not knowing what kind of rules are going to be in play with a new CBA, that could become a bigger situation, including Nimmo's contract, than we think. All right, let's wrap up here. One more. What do we got? What do we got? What do we got? We'll get a couple more. Jason writes, I'm writing to share my thoughts on the team's current performance and direction. With the season feeling like it's already over, I believe it's time to trade what you can help the farm system. While Tong and Scott have looked okay, there is significant room for improvement across the roster. McClain needs to be better, and Devin Williams has to be more effective. Most importantly, we need to find some hitters. This offense is dreadful, has become nearly unwatchable. It's hard to believe it can be this bad, and with 4 months left, the season can't end soon enough. regarding specific development. I'd like to see Bench find some power. Three home runs is simply not good enough for this level of this team. It takes a lot of energy out of the fans, and we are looking for significant changes. Well, Jason, I talked about this. I think that's what's going to be the deadline all about. I don't think that Jacob Reimers and Elian Pena are down the minors. I don't think Pena is anywhere near close. I don't know what Jacob Reimers is going to be at. Mitch Foyt, who they drafted last year, not performing well. I think bats are going to be part of it. I think power with Ewing and Benj will come. Be patient on that. I think Benj had, the last couple of games, he got robbed in D.C. by the wind. He had a couple of shots on Friday in Miami that at least one I thought was out. I think it's going to come. So as far as the rest of the lineup, getting Lindor back, you lost 30 home runs there. That's going to be big. Polanco's another, 20 to 25 home run guy. They have some power that I think is going to come back. Whether or not they could add another big bat, at some point, I know there's been conversations about Christian Walker and Yordan Alvarez and where's the next big bat that they could acquire. You're nowhere near as that. If there's going to be some kind of fire sale for a generational talent like Alvarez, you're going to have to give up some serious prospect capital. I think the Mets, and it's really important for the Mets to figure out what prospect capital they want to hold on to here. They really need to figure that part out before they start ripping it apart for more in-prime stars that, may or may not, be a solution long-term. So anyway, that's what I got. I'm looking over here before I sign off. I'll read one more. Let me read one. Let me go to the Ryan in the chat room. It's amazing how subpar offense offseason this has turned into. I don't see how Stearns can survive this. Is he betting himself as looking like a horse's you-know-what in front of the fan base? I don't know if the young outfielders are really ready. I think we are rushing kids to the minors because Stearns decided to try to play players with injury issues in the past. I kind of addressed that, Ryan. I understand that. Stearns isn't going anywhere. Like I said, you're blowing up the entire organization. And I'm not so sure outside of Robert Jr. And even he, unless they knew about the lumbar issue, the back issue, because those are serious, that anybody they got this offseason was a huge injury risk. It's not like it's Mo Vaughn that they got here. So anyway, that's it. Let's get on with our Memorial Day weekend. Hopefully, if you're in the New York area, you could stay a little bit dry and go enjoy yourself a little bit. Maybe have, I don't know if you can even have a barbecue. You could take your umbrella out and have a barbecue. I know you don't mind if you want to watch baseball. Obviously, there's Knicks basketball. Hopefully, the Knicks can wrap this thing up this week and head on to the NBA Finals if you're a Knicks fan. Of course, you could always continue to check me out here over at the Substack. Great premium content. For less than a cup of coffee a month, love for you to join us. If you haven't, if you're listening for Memorial Day, if you email me, I'll give you a 30-day. I got a bunch of Memorial Day coupons. I'll give you a 30-day trial. Just email me at MikeSilvat@TalkingMetsPodcast.com, and I'll give you a trial. And then after that, if you decide to stick around, it's $5 a month, less than a cup of coffee, and you get some good content in between. And if you're a guy like James over at the Substack, why wouldn't you want to listen to my voice and my New York accent? So there you go. Just having some fun with that. All right, that's it. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at TalkingMetsOG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, MikeSilva@TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, MikeSilva@TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And as I said, come join me at the new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Chat for free, premium content, updates on the show, all at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. Check me out on Apple and Spotify. Leave a 5-star review because why not? You love this show. And of course, I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. I'm yours, Mike Silva. Happy Memorial Day. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then, take care, everybody.